Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, everybody. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan here with a brand new lineup and a brand new season. The New England Patriots setting off on their odyssey this year, hosting the Raiders of Las Vegas, and we're here to talk about it for the next 3 hours. Myself, Arcan, Mego's here, Chris Scheim is here, and our newest member of the team, Teddy's here. What's up, Teddy?
What's
how we
up,
doing?
Guys? How we doing? Good to be with you guys today.
Great
Very
to be with you.
To I haven't done a pregame show in many, many years, so I'm looking forward to joining you guys all season long.
Excellent. And we're glad to have you. And, of course, Scheim and Mego, we got a lot of the same bells and whistles that we've had in the last previous years. We'll be talking with Tommy Curran today. We got Wiggy's Keys. We got some new fun stuff that I'm very excited about. But let's go ahead and begin with what I think is, well, let's go around the room, actually, and do this. Mm-hmm. Because with this season starting anew here and the Mike Vrabel era beginning in Foxborough, we have all sorts of different storylines that I think could be the driving narratives of this entire season. We were talking about this, and we've been, you know, emailing and everything before the show all week long. And let's go around the room with what we believe to be the biggest storylines of this team and of this season. Ted, let's start with you.
Yeah, for me, it's far and away the new head coach. I think the Patriots finally got what's the most important combination right, which is quarterback and head coach. And I'm a believer in Mike Vrabel. Of course, I played with him for 5 years. I always thought one day he would be a head coach in this league. And he has been, obviously, for the Tennessee Titans. Left there, was fired there, even though I think he was finished his tenure there, 10 games over 500. I think he's an excellent coach. And I think a lot of people are bullish on the Patriots, primarily because of the Mike Vrabel impact. So we will see. If this franchise, the Patriots, the last 5 years since Tom Brady left, it's kind of been in a tailspin. It's trying to find its way. They need a stabilizing force. I think that's Mike Vrabel. And when you listen to people talk about the Patriots season, people are really, they reference Mike Vrabel first when it comes to them thinking that the Patriots are going to do well. A lot of people think it's going to be because of Mike, and I think he's going to change the culture here and get a professional ecosystem once again. So for me, guys, that's probably my number one biggest storyline, is how Mike Vrabel impacts this team overall.
Do you think he's been a stabilizing presence so far? Like, I mean, he's not been here that long, but based on the preseason and based on camp and everything else and some of the press conferences lately and all that, has he been stabilizing?
You know what, Christian, you guys, the first presser that he had when he got hired here to probably about 2 weeks ago, yeah, I thought so. I thought he had the steering wheel
at
10-2.
Weeks ago?
And then, you know, a couple weeks ago, we can maybe get to it. There was just a comment that he made in reference to a Jalen Polk kind of report getting out there that he was going to be on IR and needed to get surgery. Mike called someone that told that person in the media a rat. And so
we have that, actually, if you want to refresh everyone's memory.
So this is where things have started to kind of unravel a little bit. I think this was after the second preseason game that he said this. This was a report that came out. And I guess apparently Mike did not like that it got out, and this is what he said when asked about it.
There's a report today that Jalen Polk will have to have season-ending shoulder surgery. Can you add anything to that? No. I don't know, other than I'd like to find out where some of these come from. You know, some of these rats around here, so we'll figure that out.
So it's going to be fascinating to see, do the rats stop ratting? Because you need a coherent front office and coaching staff if you're going to be successful. They got to be on the same page. And you just wonder if Vrabes and Elliot Wolf, the general manager, are on the same page. We don't know, but that is a storyline to follow because, let's face it, a lot of the draft picks that Elliot Wolf has brought in here are not on this team. No team has less draft picks still remaining on their current roster between the drafts of 2021 to 2024 than the New England Patriots.
It's been so
They've
bad.
Been terrible. And so that you wonder, you know, Chris, if that relationship is in trouble. So that's just something I'm going to be watching, and I think it's going to that's going to factor into whether or not this is a successful season or not.
Chris Scheim, what's the biggest storyline of the year?
For me, it's the acquisition of Josh McDaniels. I, all offseason, had been a proponent of getting a newer, younger, fresher mind in here to kind of run the offense and help your quarterback grow. And as a huge Drake May guy, maybe the number one Drake May guy in the New England region outside of the Drake May lover Twitter account.
that guy's unbelievable.
He's tremendous.
Whoever it is,
it's amazing. Tremendous
account,
yeah. I followed him the minute I saw it. It was great.
Phenomenal. I worry that Josh McDaniels is going to keep Drake May in this box that Drake May doesn't necessarily belong in. Historically, Josh McDaniels' offenses have been relatively conservative, right? It's kind of predicated on the Tom Brady, I'm going to throw it left, I'm going to throw it right, short passes, hit guys in the middle, like don't really attack down the field. And when I saw Drake May play at UNC, when I watched the tape, when I saw him come into the NFL, I'm like, it's basically just a more mobile version of Brett Favre. This guy wants to uncork the football. He wants to let it ride. He is a big game hunter. And if Josh McDaniels kind of keeps him in this box and does not allow him to kind of play to his strengths, I am just concerned that we are not going to get to see the best of Drake May. And that, to me, could be a massive difference between, you know, double-digit wins and seven.
I mean, man, that gets you going. Your juice is going.
Certainly does.
It is an interesting thing to think about. Yeah. I haven't really heard anybody put it quite like that. You know, you know, most people are saying, you know, that Josh is going to have a positive impact, and he's going to, you know, keep him, keep him within himself so that he doesn't turn the ball over as much as he did. But that's interesting. You almost worry that he could go too far the other way and not let him exploit what his true gifts are, which is his athleticism.
His athleticism and his arm talent. I mean, one of the reasons he was such a great prospect is because he can make every throw in the book. Anywhere on the football field, he can put the football. And, yeah, like, that was a big thing for me. And so if you're just kind of doing these screens and short passes and, you know, crossing routes, it's like, when are we really going to get to see the actual Drake May? It may look better on the interception number, but will everything else actually be better?
Yeah, and listen, we all hope it does, and we all hope that it is. With Josh McDaniels, my biggest question for him is, can he have success anywhere else under Bill Belichick's wing? You know what I mean?
Like,
that's because that's the only time he's ever really had any success. And it's not just been Tom Brady. He had that Mac Jones year and even put a decent offense with Cam Newton together, I thought. So when he's working for Bill, he's been effective. When he hasn't been with Bill, he's been a disaster. So that's, I mean, you know, it's the Patriots, but Bill's gone. This is a whole new thing. He's now working for a guy that was his contemporary, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they coached against each other, and now he's your head coach. And I wonder how that dynamic's going to
work. Yeah, I think, Mego, you even told me on one of our weekend shows that McDaniels, without Bill Belichick, has had, what, one top 12 offense?
And it was 12th.
Yeah, it was 12th, and it was one of those years with the Raiders where I'm pretty sure his two receivers were Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers.
Right, and I think one of the other common factors of Josh McDaniels' struggles away from Belichick is also, in most cases, if not all, he didn't have the quarterback.
Sure.
And so I think that segues well into what far and away is the story of the season for me, which is this a second-year jump or a sophomore slump for Drake May? And if you just look at quarterbacks who have risen to the cream of the crop in the league right now, obviously Justin Herbert had the year two of all year twos, 5,000 yards, 38 touchdowns. Joe Burrow's year two, 4,600 yards, 34 touchdowns. Lamar Jackson, 3,100 yards, still quite a runner at that time, 36 touchdowns. Go back to Matthew Stafford's true second year in 2011 because he had an injury in between. 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns. The only real outlier of quarterbacks who we consider to be top 10 among most lists in all of this is Josh Allen. And of course, when we look at Drake May, he's often compared to Josh Allen. I just wonder, who's this kid going to be this year? How is he going to function with Josh McDaniels? Is McDaniels going to, I wouldn't say take the training wheels off, but maybe open it up for him once he's gained that trust and gained the rhythm and getting the ball out quick in McDaniel's system? Does he let him color outside the lines? I also wonder if you guys happen to see, because it was on Twitter a little bit, this long form story from Tyler Dunn. So this is a, he has the Go Long website where he does these in-depth, in-depth features on NFL players and just NFL overall. He had this series called The House of Dysfunction and the Curious Case of Caleb Williams. And he had all this information about how the scouts and the front office from Chicago literally laughed at Drake May putting
Poles was mocking
him.
all of his bad throws and all his bad takes.
So basically they were trying to make a case inside the house.
Carolina.
Yes, that they were drafting Caleb Williams number one no matter what, did not want Drake May, and they put together basically a blooper reel to show of his bad plays from UNC. This is one of the quotes from a Bears scout that was in the room. This is from Ty Dunn. They made fun of him. They laughed. The GM laughed Drake May off the screen and cut the tape off. So I know a lot of us around here feel like Drake May has arrived.
Yeah.
We feel very confident because he passes the eye test so well. But I do wonder, for the rest of the league, he still has something to prove.
Boy, I would love to sit on that film session and
kind of. You ever heard anything like that before?
No.
Like looking at rookie like I know it's not front office stuff. You were a player, but like, have you ever heard anything like that?
I have not. That's
that's
wow.
It's even crazier to think too that the Giants were so desperate to trade up to where the Patriots were to draft Drake May that there could be two teams so completely opposed on a view of Drake May.
Yeah, I wonder. Is it the bad decisions out of the pocket? Is it? You know, what was it exactly that they were? I mean, because let's face it. I mean, the things, 16 turnovers, 6 fumbles, and 10 interceptions in the 10 games he played in is too much. I wonder if it was that, or was it him not being able to see guys wide open, because there's been opportunities in the preseason where he did miss some wide open guys down the field in one of those earlier preseason games. So I'm curious what exactly they were pointing the finger at, but that's good stuff, Mago. I had not heard that, and most people that follow the league and follow this stuff closely feel like Drake May's a special talent. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and there was a scout who was like, "Hey guys, come on, we're being a little tough on Drake May," and they like showed him throw a touchdown pass, and they're like, "Well, what about that?" And then Poles puts on a video of him getting sacked. He's like, "What about that?"
Yeah. he was literally like, "You like that? You like that play from him, huh?" Because one guy in the room is going, "Hey, maybe we should watch another tape besides this blooper reel."
Well, they were set on Caleb Williams. Like, we know that. You know that that's what they were going to do. But it's almost like if they were so set on that, and he was the consensus number one pick, then what do you have to denigrate Drake May for?
Well, it just feels like you have to convince yourself that you're right about Caleb Williams. Like, that's what it feels like.
Exactly.
That's a good point. You are so insecure in your decision of taking Caleb Williams, you have to find everything possible wrong with Drake May to make yourself feel better.
That's a touche on that, Chris. Very good point. And, you know, what makes me a little nervous, I'm curious, because I was kind of hoping to – Bagel, you went out to a lot of the practices. I went to a few. And I wanted to see a bigger jump in preseason and in OTAs. I wanted to hear stories of, oh, Drake May was lighting it up in practice. You don't have to be every day, but every once in a while, what I like to hear is a player showing out in practice, because that signals to me that he is on the right track to doing that in the games. Not one time did I hear Drake May show out in a practice or in a preseason game. And that has me a little bit nervous about the season.
Yeah. I didn't really play much in the preseason games either.
I think the first preseason game was kind of a total wash from him. We know that he can have a 5-yard rushing touchdown. We don't need to see that. We need to see if he can connect with Mac Hollins or whoever else is out there that's supposed to be a vet coming in and helping him. But to your point, Ted, I think the best that Drake looked maybe all summer from a practice perspective was the joint practice with the Commanders. And it's because we were watching him and making the obvious comparisons to Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And Shime, he was functioning in that Josh McDaniels system. He was not taking deep shots, but he looked on time. He looked in total command at the line of scrimmage. He was getting the ball out really quick. And I think if Drake is successful, that's who we're going to see a lot of at the beginning of this season.
All right. We got a lot of narratives here. We got to get to break in just a minute. I want to give my biggest storyline because you guys have gotten the major ones, Vrabel, Drake May, et cetera, Josh McDaniels. Mine's the defense. I think this defense, they invested so much into it in this offseason. They didn't even go all offense in the draft. They did mostly offense, but they picked some rookies in the defense as well, spent all this money on Milton Williams and Carlton Davis and Robert Spillane and all these other guys. And I don't think that this necessarily will be the biggest narrative, but it kind of should be. Like, that's who you invested into this team. That should be the strength of this team. And this defense last year was terrible. I mean, you know, it was a really, really just poor unit. So the improvement of the defense and that being the lead, I'd say, strength of this team should be, in my opinion, the biggest narrative. We got much more to come here on Football Sunday here on WEEI. We're going to talk about what you just heard, what we listened to open up here, which was the end of last season, and we'll take a look at the Las Vegas Raiders, a team with a very familiar head coach to Ted Johnson and to all of us, of course. We'll have They Said It as well coming up at 11 and more. Don't go anywhere.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's touch on the Patriots. Drake May, what do you see on tape? What type of player is he?
He's really good. He's a really well-rounded athlete, runs well, is apt to take off. You know, if you give him any kind of space, he's going to get out some. A really live arm, can use the whole field. He's got a big arm and seems to be very creative. What you like about him is competitiveness. He's a good competitor. He battles.
Welcome back. It's WEEI Football Sunday here. Christian Arcan, Ted Johnson, Megan Ottolini, and Chris Scheim with you until 1 o'clock. Well, most of us will be anyway. We're brought to you by New England Recovery Centers of Westboro. And what you just heard right there was the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, the ageless Pete Carroll. He's not ageless, actually. He's older than Bill Belichick, if you didn't know that. But he's still coaching in the NFL. Ages. Took over for Vegas this year and had some nice things to say about both Drake May and Mike Vrabel in that interview. It was one of those Raiders.com one-on-one shows. And this is a guy that you're very familiar with, Ted. But before we get to your familiarity with Pete Carroll and what he was like back in the day, taking over a team like the Raiders with an old coach, this was a big question that people had about Bill Belichick. The people who were dubious about him getting hired, the main thought was, well, why would you hire such an old coach? If you're a bad team and you're trying to rebuild and start over, whatever it is, which the Raiders clearly are, then why would you start with a guy who maybe is only going to coach for another year or two? Why do you think that the Raiders hired Pete Carroll?
It is energy. It's the energy. And I read an article where Pete came into the facility there in Las Vegas and just blew everybody away with his positive energy. And so that's the biggest contrast between, if you ever want to know why, Bill Belichick doesn't have a job with the Raiders and why Pete does, it's just overall attitude and approach to the job on a daily basis. Pete is inclusive. He comes in with a positive attitude. And Shime, I talked to you in the break about Pete a little bit, and sometimes that positive energy can, if you're not winning, can almost, you know, come across as just, you know, just really just meaningless. So that's the thing with Pete. Pete's great when you're winning. When you're losing, it can get old. But that, to answer your question, Christian, the reason he's hired is because I just think he brought a vision and an energy that obviously Mark Davis was drawn to, and that's why he's the head coach.
I also think the Raiders aren't necessarily fully trying to rebuild. Like, it may, we know that they're not all that good, but like, a lot of people think they might actually make the playoffs this year. I think the bringing in of Geno Smith, not drafting
who thinks that?
Yeah. I've heard a couple people say it. Not me, but I've heard a couple people say it.
Every team in the West is going to make the playoffs.
Hey, there's a chance.
Redwoods kind of have to. If they come in fourth place.
I think they're a 7-8 win team, but yeah. I think bringing in Geno Smith, bringing in Pete Carroll shows that they want to try and win games right now. You have Max Crosby on that huge deal. They kind of don't want that to go to waste. So I think they're trying to jumpstart it a little bit and maybe not fully kind of skip some of those rebuild steps.
Yeah, certainly could be. A lot of good young offensive players on this Raiders team here, including the unknown in Janty, who we'll see in his first game tonight. Bowers is
he's
tremendous
so
tight end.
Amazing.
Already. What do you think about this offense, Megan?
So I think it's going to be really interesting to see with the weather what their approach is going to be today, because I think leading up to this game this week, we thought about Chip Kelly, that he's going to spread it out and have that kind of offense, especially when Christian Gonzalez is out. You're going to try to attack Alex Austin on that side, or if Marcus Jones is repping in over there, whoever, DJ James maybe. We don't really know how they're going to attack that and send Brock Bowers over the middle and force them to get creative with their safeties in the secondary. But I think now with the weather, we might be seeing a lot of Ashton Jeanty versus Travion Henderson on the other side. And just from watching the Commanders joint practice, I'm not super confident in the Patriots' ability to stop the run still. I think it's something that they, I'm not saying it's
not like
that
Colts Jaguars last year.
I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm just saying I haven't seen enough to feel like when we talk about the possibility of this being a top five or at least top 10 defense, that that's going to be their calling card. And again, with Christian Gonzalez out, the conditions, what they are, I think the Chip Kelly offense that we're going to see today, could be wrong, but might be a little bit less of what we're used to.
Yeah, I think the running game, I'm worried about stopping the run as well. And you're right. You know, Chip Kelly's offense has evolved over the last, you know, 15 years. He came into the league with Philly in 2013, and he ran the up-tempo spread stuff.
High flying with Nick Foles.
Yeah. And it just that style.
UNH legend Chip Kelly.
He is. Then on to Oregon and then in the pros. He doesn't do that up-tempo kind of fast play after play after play kind of thing anymore. But there's still similar principles. He still likes to run the spread. He still likes the RPO out of the one back. And so he likes to spread it out so that it's clearly kind of defined where the matchups are for the quarterback. So there's a simplicity to his play calling, but there's a philosophy to it, and it's all based off of that inside zone read, the RPO fake handoff, either hand it off, keep it and run, or keep it and throw off the play action. Those are core concepts. And so with the weather, you're right. My guess is a lot of Ashton Jeanty, but I was interested to see what he did in the passing game in college. He wasn't that impactful in the passing game. My feeling is when you draft a guy that high, that you're gonna involve him in the passing game more. And so quick game screens, a lot of draws, a lot of things to keep him active, I'm guessing, with Ashton Jeanty.
Did you like that pick?
I understood it.
So no.
Yes. I don't mind it.
You accepted it.
I did, because I'm a running back guy. Maybe it's just from the era I come from, but people that crap on running backs, I don't know, the flag carrier for the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles was a running back. I think they can still be bell cows. And even though, yes, they don't catch the long ball, they're the guys that keep the chains moving, and they're the ones that establish a physicality on your team.
Do you think, Ted, between Saquon, Derrick Henry, we see Ashton Jeanty get drafted as high as he did, there may be like a mini renaissance of the running back right now, because it's been so, obviously quarterback is going to be everything, but it's been so heavily in that direction the last 15 years.
I think it should be. I think those guys should be paid more than what they're paid. They touch the ball, you know, the really good ones, anywhere from 15 to 25 times a game. So when you're giving somebody that kind of attention in a game, and you don't value them or think they're important or don't highlight them. I just don't understand that thinking.
I think right now, too, in the NFL, you're seeing the best teams in football all have the best offensive lines. And I think it's more so not even necessarily a running back renaissance.
Diminishing them again.
Yeah, totally. It's a trenches renaissance where offensive and defensive lines have become like so much more important than it felt like they used to be. And now because of those great offensive lines, you're seeing a lot of these running backs just shine. Guys like Saquon Barkley behind Philadelphia, Derrick Henry, you go down the list.
Detroit.
All these guys. Yeah, James Cook last year. James Cook was not a great running back. Buffalo got a tremendous offensive line, and then he had 16 touchdowns. Like, I think that's what you're starting to see in the NFL.
On the subject of the offensive line, the Patriots will get the inactives today at 11:30, but right now we know that rookie left tackle Will Campbell is questionable to go. He suffered an injury last week, I believe it is. We don't know yet what his status is going to be. But for this Patriots offensive line, Drake May's learning a new offense, right? That's what we've been hearing. And maybe that's why he didn't get all the reps that he wanted or didn't look as good in the preseason. It's because he's learning this new McDaniels offense. Does it matter what kind of offense it is if he's running for his life every other snap?
No, that's the most important unit on the football team. You will hear me say this as long as we're working together is the offensive line. I just think it's the truth, Mago. It's just the facts. That is the most important unit because it's the true kind of encapsulates what football is all about how interdependent the sport is. To do your job, you need the guy next to you to do his job. And that's the only way it works. That's how the offensive line basically is. If the guy next to you can't do his job, then you're screwed. If one guy messes up, the whole offensive line looks bad. You have to keep Drake May protected. And I've seen offensive lines destroy quarterbacks and kill their confidence, and they never reach their full potential. Andrew Luck comes to mind. David Carr comes to mind. You got to protect these guys. And so that to me, this team is gonna win or lose based on how this offensive line plays. And I'm worried about the two rookies on the left side, left guard, a rookie, left tackle, a rookie. You saw in the first preseason game against the Commanders on the first third and long situation. It was a third and seven. They drop back to pass, and Drake May gets drilled and loses the football because the two rookies on the left side gave up an X stunt and got his quarterback killed. And that's the perfect example of what makes people concerned about two rookies being on that left side.
Yeah, and I think ultimately Campbell is going to be okay this year.
I hope so.
He's going to be okay. I think Jared Wilson at this point is a bigger question mark because he did get rotated out of that de facto starting position
like pretty quick
towards the end of preseason, and they were trying to put Ben Brown at times in there and figure out what they were going to do there. So I think you're right that blindside can crumple like tinfoil at points. I think we've made such a big deal over Campbell because he's the number four overall pick, of course. But I do think that if we're looking at that left side, right now the guard is a little bit of a bigger question.
I would say to me, I'm even more concerned about right tackle at times. Like Morgan Moses was not on the field basically at all during preseason.
Yeah.
And then is coming off a knee injury, is later on in his career. Can he play 17 games? Or are we going to have to see seventh round rookie, whatever his name is, over at
Marcus
right tackle?
Bryan.
Thank you, Marcus Bryan over at right tackle. Like that to me is a massive concern. If you have to start three rookies on the offensive line this year, that is, it feels like a recipe for disaster.
It is interesting how Braves kind of handled the vets. I mean, a little bit. I thought there'd be a little bit more action with Steph Diggs. Maybe not Steph, but Carlton Davis, Morgan Moses. These are all free agents they brought in that you're really going to be leaning on.
They were chilling.
Yeah, you didn't see much of them. So being concerned about the right tackle, I think, is very valid. There's a reason he was available and on the market for what they paid for. And the fact he didn't play much, I think is a reason to be concerned.
Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, reporting that Will Campbell will make his debut. He's expected to make his debut today. Not that he will.
He's expected to,
but we don't know what percent he's going to be at. So that could end up being, it's good that he'd be out there. But
and you get Max Crosby.
Yeah, exactly.
good luck with that kid. He typically lines up against the right side, right?
Sure, but I mean, a defensive end can kind of swap back.
He'll find his way over there.
Exactly, 100%.
Can I just make a comment about that, too? Because it's a good point. Max Crosby, sometimes, guys are comfortable going, back and forth. I think he likes to stay on what the offense's right side is most of the time. But that doesn't mean they're not going to have, some surprises for the left side. What I'm expecting is a lot of overload blitzes to that left side, showing those two rookies on the left side that you're going to be sending a lot of guys and then backing out late to confuse them. They're going to game plan for those two guys on the left side, even if Max Crosby is lined up on the opposite side.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Pete Carroll, because you have more of a knowledge of him and what he likes to do offensively, defensively, all throughout his career, which is a long time. And I know that you played for him a long time ago, but he's still out there and still doing his thing. So let's get into the meat and potatoes here of what Drake May and that offense needs to do in order to break through on a Pete Carroll-led defense.
Well, you know what? They play cover three, and I had my most productive kind of years in cover three. It's a one gap under front. It's they overload to the strong side of whatever the formation is. That doesn't mean much to a lot of you guys out there, but
I love it. Keep going.
It sounds good.
It's not as a physical defense as a 3-4. So you let the linebackers can run. It's all about speed, speed, speed. And they like to play with three deep look, and so that there's eight guys in the box, a little bit harder to get the run against them. But then that means the corners are soft. Now you got to get some yards and impact, you know, gains from the outside, the boundary receivers. That's where they're going to be the softest. And then you can exploit, you got to worry about them exploiting the middle linebacker. And this is Spillane. Spillane's going to have a tough cover. A lot of times they like to put the kind of their slot receivers one-on-one on the middle linebackers and get mismatches there. So that's something to be concerned about. But it's a simple defense that everybody understands. You can, and they'll have an answer for everything you throw at them. And so it's going to be a very, very, I would say, just smart, fast, you know, my guess is he'll blitz a lot to kind of put pressure on Drake and see how he handles it initially. But it's going to be, they don't have maybe the horses on defense, but they have a good, a signal caller and a good scheme on that side. So that's, even though that defense for the Raiders doesn't scare me from their personnel standpoint, I do respect the Pete scheme.
Yeah, Pete Carroll, who also in the Richard Sherman podcast had a lot to say about his time in New England, coming from San Francisco, et cetera. Do we have the...
That situation from the start was a little challenging. We did everything first class in San Francisco. Right. I mean, top drawer, treated the players great. It was a clear philosophy that I was bringing. I was excited to unveil. The first thing we get to, we're having a mini camp. And so I'm just checking out, you know, how the setup of it, how it's organized. I'm figuring into the menu for the players on that weekend, yep. You know. And Kraft comes to me and says, well, you know, we're not going to feed them like that. You know, we give them bologna sandwiches and chips and stuff like that. It hit me just as clear as a bell that I'm in deep trouble.
I don't get it. What's wrong with bologna sandwiches?
Hey, you know
I
what?
I mean, for a professional athlete, I think you might need like seven.
I had a college coach who took us to McDonald's once before a game.
Dude, when hey. I grew up poor, man. And so bologna was in my house all the time, man. I didn't have a problem. A little bit of maybe of an over-exaggeration, probably more ham, turkey. I don't remember bologna sandwiches.
Okay.
But the point is, I always found that a bit an interesting kind of statement from Pete, because, and I didn't know any better, guys. I played for one team my whole career. I didn't think it was that bad. But when you've heard stories, and what I did, I mean, Pete, when he came here from the 49ers, they were obviously winning Super Bowls, and it was a storied franchise. And Eddie DeBartolo, the former owner, was famous for really spending on his players, took the whole team and their wives to Hawaii after they won a Super Bowl. I can't imagine Robert Kraft ever doing that. But
we are all Patriots.
and so it was an interesting kind of thing. The biggest thing that when Pete brought is that we love the fact that there was one coach that was changing the way teams practice, and his name was Bill Walsh. And if you had any coach that came from the Bill Walsh tree, you were grateful because you don't hit as much. That was his philosophy. We're not going to just beat these guys into oblivion during the week so they're fresh on game days. Where I had a Parcells before that, where all we did was hit all week, right? And so when Pete came, we took the pads off halfway through practice, and it was the greatest thing ever. Unfortunately, we just got the wrong players. The older vets, the guys that, you know, were on those teams in the mid-90s, we all loved the fact that Pete was like that and how he handled practice, but it just wasn't good enough.
One critical update as we talk about Robert Kraft and spending of owners on their players. Do we know if the plane was outfitted in any special way?
Do we have Wi-Fi on the plane now?
How is the survey going to? Because they've been dedicating everything to building out that new facility down next to the practice.
They have better ashtrays on the plane now, because that's an important factor to consider. Here.
We've always had a situation where we spend to the cap.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Just $60 million lying there. That's
yeah. Hey, it's a 3-year average is you're what right, it's talking right, about.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay?
Most certainly is. And what's interesting, Ted, is that, you know, you were there for the old stadium, obviously, and yep. that big field with the tent out in the field where the VIPs used to hang out. But then you were also there and saw the revitalization of that whole area and everything else. So, you know what I mean? Like, that had to have at least looked like something. It was a long time ago now, but at the time, that was state-of-the-art stuff, right?
It was. Yeah. It absolutely was. And one more Pete Carroll story. There was... You know, there was rumors of or stories of guys going up the back stairway to Bobby Greer's office. Yep, I got called up to his office. You know what? It was interesting. Pete had a team meeting kind of almost towards the end of the 1999 season, his last season here, and it was almost like we didn't realize it, but he knew he was maybe on his way out. We didn't really know that, but the way he talked to our team and addressed us was a weird team meeting, which he basically said, you know, they're about to fire me. You guys don't want that to happen, do you, kind of thing? And who's with me, kind of thing? And it was like, but Pete.
We're behind you, buddy. Way behind you.
You know what, though? He went to USC, won a couple national championships, became a better coach, and did
cheated
what he did.
His ass off and then came back.
Just like Reggie Jim Bush. Harbaugh.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're just getting started here. It is Football Sunday here on WEEI. Coming up next, we'll go inside the locker room with Megan Ottolini. She had a nice conversation with Robert Spillane and Christian Gonzalez, not on the roster today. He is out with an injury, and is it maybe more than just an injury? We'll get into all.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
All of that next.
WEEI.
Bullish. I believe that they are where the Denver Broncos were last year to a certain extent. People were not expecting Denver to rise up, and in the end, they had a better season than people expected, won more games than people expected, went to the playoffs. I kind of feel the same way about this New England team. I'm not going to be surprised if they win more games than expected, and I'm not going to be surprised if they wind up going to the playoffs as a wild card team. Just calling it right now.
Adam Schefter right there. It's Football Sunday here, WEEI. That was Schefty with WEEI Afternoons earlier this week. Bullish on the Patriots, as I feel like many in the national media seem to be. And that's interesting because I personally am not. I think that that's a very, very ambitious and optimistic outlook here for this Patriots team. But whether you think they're going to win 6 games or 8 games or 12 games or whatever, it's going to be hard to hit that total without Christian Gonzalez, who is out of the lineup with a hamstring injury. It's an injury that's bothered him for over a month. Mego, you've been down there the most. What have you seen, heard? What's the scuttlebutt with Gonzalez? And is this just an injury?
It's so bizarre. I think it's pretty clear that he had to have some kind of setback between the trip to Minnesota and the end of preseason, because he was around all the time after that injury, and we can't talk specifically about what guys are doing on the side for their injury rehab because it's in front of us, but I thought, okay, like, he's going to be coming back on schedule, and it's going to be fine, and he's going to be out there week one, and then all of a sudden, it's just, he's still not out there, he's still not practicing. I don't think it's contract situation related. I think it's still too early in his development for that, in the development, how far away they are from giving him an extension. I just think it has to be this soft tissue lingering stuff that they're looking at and saying they don't have a number one receiver on the Raiders. I mean, Jacoby Myers, if he was here, he would be your number one receiver, but not a true, you know, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson.
He is their best receiver.
Yeah.
Their best receiver is Brock Bowers.
Right.
Yeah, it's not even close.
So I think that they're looking at it and going, we know we really need this guy for the 16 other games. He's not good to go this week. You can't push it right now.
Yeah, especially those hamstring injuries are so funny. Like, I would rather you just take
hilarious.
Your time. Yeah. Okay, funky maybe a better word. Like, I would rather you take your time and not rush into this because, great, if he comes back and he plays 2-3 games but then re-injures it, it's like, well, what are we doing here? I'd rather him just almost honestly just sit out the entire first month and be ready to go for Sunday night against the Bills. Like, that to me is the right time. It's like, okay, you have had now ample time to recover from this hamstring injury. It's not going to re-aggravate. You're going to be fine. You're going to be good to go for the rest of the season.
If he could
go to the next question.
If he could be out there, he would be out there. I don't think it's a contract thing.
You don't think it's a business decision?
No,
and I don't mean contract. I mean in the sense of he's talking
to
his agent. He knows this team's not very good. And, you know, like how we used to look at other teams. When the Patriots were winning championships, we'd look at these other bad teams with these holdouts. And they'd say, yeah, this guy doesn't want to play for this crap team this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, Arkin, I wish it was. Mm. I wish it was the case, but I don't think it is. I think he's not healthy right now.
That's, to me, this is a very interesting storyline. The two players that guys are watching how the head coach handles, because they're all trying to figure out, you know, what they can get away with the head coach. You know, what are the boundaries that are going to be set by the head coach? How he handles the Christian Gonzalez and how Vrabel handles Steph Diggs' personality, I think, are two very interesting players. My guess is that Vrabes is really ticked off that he doesn't have his best player. And there's some winnable games here to start. And I think it's imperative that they get off to a fast start or else they can snowball quickly. He being available and on the field, Christian Gonzalez, allows them to do things from a blitzing standpoint that I don't think you can do when he's not on the field. So it takes away a lot of what I think they want to do on defense to not have him out there, and that's probably factoring in some of his frustrations.
I think you're right about the frustration, because every time people ask Vrabel about it, he bites their head off. Like, he's not like answering excessive questions about Gonzalez. He starts snapping at people. So, yeah, I think there's definitely some tension there.
And I understand why people bring up the contract thing, because Vrabel himself brought it up at the beginning of the preseason. So it makes sense to kind of make that connection. But to me, it's just hamstring injuries are just so... You have to be super careful with them, otherwise they immediately re-aggravate.
Do you put any credence into the fact that some people would say this was maybe the book on him, though, is that he's a soft player, that this type of stuff came up in the past in his college careers. And this
when he abandoned our Buffaloes to go to Oregon.
Hell no.
Yes,
you kidding me? Did he? Oh, he did abandon our Buffaloes. Yeah, he did. He took off. You know what? So screw him.
And they were such a good team, too. I can't imagine. The 1-11.
But
want to stay there.
Part of the book on him has been stuff like this. And is he, you know, mentally tough enough? Hamstring injuries can last up to two months. So it's not that surprising. That he's maybe is it had to be a pretty severe one for it to be that, but this is something that we got to be watching close how he manages Christian Gonzalez, because everyone's watching and seeing how that all plays out.
Megan Ottolini was in the locker room and spoke to Robert Spillane. We have that for you right now. Here's Mego from the locker room.
Inside the locker room with Megan Ottolini.
Right, I'm here in the locker room with Robert Spillane. So, Robert, I just got to ask you, how are you feeling going into your first game as a New England Patriot?
Yeah, I'm fired up to be here. I'm fired up to go out and take the field with the guys. We've been putting in a lot of work this offseason, so just to see it all pay off on Sunday will be exciting.
If you had to describe this team in one word or a couple words, what has Vrabel been trying to make your identity here?
Definitely hardworking, blue-collar effort and finish is going to be our identity through and through. We need that to bleed through our film, through our resume, through how we go about our business, and I'm excited to take that first step on Sunday.
We have seen a lot of the team through training camp and preseason, but now you guys have been kind of behind the scenes from us, the media's perspective, for the last couple weeks in preparing for the Raiders. How much do you think your team has grown just in those last couple weeks behind closed doors?
Yeah, I think every day we come in here looking to get a little bit better, and I'm really proud of the guys and how they've come to work every single day, just looking for improvements in their game individually and collectively as a unit, as a defensive unit, and as a team as a whole. So I'm really excited and proud of how guys have come to work.
So some people might look at the situation here in New England and say, you guys don't have continuity from the last couple of years. Do you think that there is something positive to that? That you want continuity, obviously, but a fresh start?
I mean, part of that is being a professional, stepping into whatever circumstance you're a part of. And I think we got a bunch of true professionals here that have come to work, willing to connect and learn and get to know each other. So it seems like a brotherhood that's been around for a while already.
Something that Mike has talked to us about is the emphasis that he had on the second half of games and wanting you guys to be conditioned for that and to have better second halves than first halves. Do you feel like that's something through this summer that you've noticed in your body personally and other guys?
No doubt. We've taken conditioning to the next level here, and all for those few plays down the wire that decide the outcomes of games. So we need to be at our best in those critical situations, which usually happen deep into the fourth quarter. And we've put in the work, and now it's time just to go execute.
Okay, Hayes in the barn. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Robert Spillane there with our own Megan Ottolini with Mego in the locker room. Ted Spillane taking over for Juwan Bentley, a captain, a guy who was here a long time, didn't appear to be a scheme fit in this new Mike Vrabel defense. How do you think Spillane plays that role?
Bentley doesn't seem to be a scheme fit anywhere. He's currently not playing in the
true,
NFL,
yeah.
Which is
yep.
Crazy. But Spillane gives you more of a dynamic kind of piece to his game. He can cover better than Juwan Bentley, and he's a tackle monster, and he's dependable, and he's reliable. The last 4 years, he's only missed four games, and he's led his team in tackles the last 2 years there in Las Vegas. So he will be a tackle monster. He'll get everybody lined up. He'll be the emotional spark plug out there. I just worry about him. He cannot get injured. If something goes mm-hmm. happens to him, I'm worried about
there's no
backup.
Depth there.
Marte Mapu is his backup.
Oh,
so
oh brother.
He's vitally important for this team.
Safety.
He needs to stay healthy, and he's going to be a key part of what they do on defense.
All right, still to come here on Football Sunday. We got They Said It with Chris Scheim coming up here in just a moment. We got our inactives at 11:30, Tommy Curran, and, of course, Jermaine Wiggins' keys to the game. That's all coming up in the 11 o'clock hour here on Football Sunday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.